This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's a 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brew Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. And it's an opportunity now to catch up with Coach Mike Leach from Washington State on the Venue Kings hotline. Coach, how the heck are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in there. It feels like, it's honestly like spring today. It's, 75 degrees here in Seattle. It's gorgeous. We're about ready to watch some NCAA tournament and football season. Well, spring football season is getting ready. How was your guys' first meeting?
That was good. We're a very enthusiastic group. You know, we got quite a few guys back, a lot of enthusiasm. We've had a really good, off season. It was funny because, some of it, we went outside, you know, we plowed the field, and I mean, there weren't piles of snow, there were mountains of snow. So that was pretty cool. I mean, going out there and, we showed the, the Winter War. We showed a few clips of the Winter War. Okay. Now, when I coached in Finland, the Finns were very, very proud of the fact that during World War II, but this was early-ish in the war, when the Germans and the Russians were taking over every country that they could find, the Finns drove the Russians out of Finland, and so Russia's trying to invade Finland, and the Finns drove the Russians out, and they'd have these white snowsuits, and all you could see is maybe a face peeking out of it, or the dark color of their gun. And so they'd cross-country ski all over Finland and herd up the Russians and get after them. And they would do stuff like, just all of a sudden there'd be some place where you knew there was probably going to be a battle. They'd lay in the snow and just pop up these white figures like something off a Game of Thrones and just start firing away. And they'd even do stuff like, because the Russians had all these tanks, so they'd lay in the snow where the tanks were going to come by, pop up out of the snow, hop on the tank, and open up the little hatch and go to town with the guys inside. And we had winter maneuvers here.
Those Russians didn't have locks on their tank lid?
That wasn't wise.
Hey, so it sounds like a class that you wanted to teach. I wanted to ask you about that. It was football strategy and war strategy or something like that. Are you teaching that? What's going on with that?
That starts next Wednesday. That starts next Wednesday night. I think the most exciting part, I think, will be the discussions involved. But we got some great guest speakers coming in. And then Mike Baumgartner, who's taught counterinsurgency, he does the insurgency part. And then I'll do the football part. I'll talk about football. So I take some comfort knowing that I ought to just take the film from one meeting with the players and march it down to the class and give the same lecture all over again if I was smart. And then the other thing, I get the clicker, of course, and click through, talk a little football, talk about advantages, disadvantages, space, covering the goals of the objectives, and then of course there'll be a great discussion after that.
Hey, Mike, you asked for applications for students who wanted to be in your class, and you limited it to a 200-word essay, and you had a couple of questions, one of which was, is the wishbone a potentially viable offense for the NFL? Why or why not? What were some of your best responses to that?
You know, they're quite polarized. They were stuff like absolutely not to definitely. And the biggest thing I wanted that we wanted out of it was, well thought out answers. I think it would work. You'd have to adjust some things. First of all, you'd have to get an arsenal of quarterbacks that could run because, you know, if you run your quarterback around, he's going to get broken at some point. And although if you think about it, some former running back, scat back, receiver, DB type of guy that played quarterback in high school. It probably doesn't cost much to sign him because nobody wants him. And, you know, you could have him throw some balls, but certainly teach him the wishbone. So you'd want to have three of those guys that you could trust to run the ball within the context of the wishbone. And yeah, I do think it would work. I think it would work pretty well. And then, you know, the thing is these teams that have had quarterbacks that could run, like you think about Michael Vick early in his career, Steve Young early in his career, two examples, before they were as sharp with the offense or, maybe as, you know, as accurate on reads and things like that. You know, when they could run, it was a lot of fun. But then if they got nicked up, it wasn't quite as much fun. And then, of course, both of those guys became real proficient passers and went on to have great careers. But, you know, yeah, I do think you could run the wishbone. I think it would be very troublesome for any team that had to play you because it's a matchup deal. And you'd be the only team like that they'd play all year. The other thing, though, I think your defense would have to adjust some because you'd have to be able to scout up for your defense what the other teams are doing. But you'd have the opportunity to do that every week, you know, where your opponent only has the opportunity to do that 1 week a year. And then they'd try to cheat and squeeze in some stuff. But, yeah, I do think it would work. I think you'd have to personnel it. I think you'd have to have an answer for quarterbacks when they get injured because your next guy can't just be the next guy. He's got to be able to run also because if he can't, it'll diminish what you can do offensively. And the worst thing you can do is be in a position where, all right, we're running this offense with this quarterback, and now we're running a whole new offense with this other quarterback because then I think that taxes all your other positions.
Another thing, Coach, I thought was interesting, and I'm not sure if this was part of the application process or if you're going to get this from the students once the class starts, but you want them to design plays for Washington State's game against Houston on September 13th. Have you gotten any advice yet on plays?
No, that happens at the end. That happens at the end. Kind of group projects. Curious what they come out up with. I think they'll have fun with it. The other thing is you never know what you might pick up because – you know, you can get, I've actually gotten good ideas just in passing conversations. You know, somebody will, hey, why doesn't this guy do this sometimes? Which, you know, almost always what they're saying is not 100% correct. But then you get to thinking, you know, well, you know, he could do a portion of that and that would be troubling and that, and you know, somebody is vulnerable there and that type of thing. And to be perfectly honest, I have adjusted, maybe a technique or a route or a line split or something around that just because, you know, everybody sees something. And I'll tell you, as a coach, you know, you can get caught up in the woods and not see the forest sometimes. And then, yeah, I mean, it's always good to have an extra set of eyes, but, you know, you got to be quick to dismiss clutter, but, you know, be open-minded enough to see something that may be beneficial.
Well, the big gulp sure worked against Oregon.
Well, that and the fact he broke eight tackles, I thought that was helpful. you know, it's funny how stuff like that goes. You know, he broke a number of tackles, so then all of a sudden the play became a brilliant play, despite the fact, you know, because you know how many brilliant plays, all our plays are brilliant if a guy's going to break that many tackles. There is this. I mean, you come out with something unorthodox and people are off balance and uncertain and hesitate a little bit. That can put you in a position where they're less inclined to make a tackle, baby. So, yeah, I think it's good, and I like the big gulp, and so we'll mess around with that some more too.
Yeah, you know, Coach. Last time we talked to you, it was we talked about strategy and in the NFL, and you know, shoot, last year they were running the fly sweep. And I was coaching high school football 10, 12 years ago, and there's a team in town. I don't know if they still do it. They run the fly sweep, Liberty High School. And now it's all the rage in the NFL. And is that the way you see it, that, like, when you execute, yeah, I mean, you can come up with new strategies and new plays and offenses. You mentioned the wishbone in the NFL, but, you know, you got to execute, right? I mean, and there's a lot of, I think, a lot of talk like, oh my gosh, this is something new. And it just seems like a lot of these things are things that have been run for a long time, and teams just happen to execute them well. And it comes as to maybe as some kind of a surprise to the opponent.
Well, I think, you know, with rare exception, it's all execution. I think it's not all. I guess all is a little strong, but you better be, if you're going to be any good on offense, it's got to be based on execution, and you've got to decide what you're going to be good at and work it and be good at it, because execution is what's going to allow you to win games. You can ambush people sometimes, and that's really tempting, and that's like, for example, reporters, they always, you know, if you beat anybody or if you run a play, they think, you know, everybody's got a little Wile E. Coyote in them, you know, because it's fun to be Wile E. Coyote, even though he doesn't. But Wile E. Coyote's a pretty good example because he almost never comes out on top on the Roadrunner. He comes up with all kinds of really clever traps and ambushes, which are fun to think about, certainly fun to set up, and certainly fun to practice, and certainly fun to do, and you can get them sometime, but in the end you got to be able to execute. And you know, the Roadrunner executes and the Coyote tries to fool everybody, and the Roadrunner usually wins. And and I think that you know, that's the hardest thing as a coach. You turn on a TV or a film, now there's more plays than ever before because you can turn on the computer and it all looks good and it all looks fun and it all be a blast to, not all of it, but a lot of it be a blast to do. And then, but the thing is, if you spread yourself too thin, you're not executing, and you can't just go out there and ambush somebody. You have to execute it, and execution's the most important thing. I mean, you know, Vince Lombardi's signature play was the fly, where when the fly sweep was the Green Bay Packers sweep, where they pulled the two guards, and everybody knew it was coming. Everybody knew who was doing what, and they had some adjustments on the front, but you know, they're going to do it over and over and over to the point where they could execute it better than their opponent could defend it. And the core of your offense has to be able to do that. And but when you ambush somebody, it is a lot of fun. You get a laugh about it. Your players like it and all that. But you got to resist the temptation to do that all the time. And that is hard.
Coach, if you were in charge of coming up with a game plan for Wile E. Coyote, what would be your approach? How would you try to coach him up?
Okay, if I was Wile E. Coyote, I would if I was Wile E. Coyote, I would limit my playbook. See, his playbook has like probably 500 plays. I would limit that playbook to like five. And I would have five plays that I was really good at, like five traps and contraptions that I was really good at, so that the bomb didn't blow up in my hand. I do it often enough that the stick of dynamite didn't blow up in my hand, that the catapult didn't flip over and smash me, that, you know, that the trip wire is somewhere where I don't trip over it, you know, because I would have practiced it over and over and over and over and over, so I was good at executing it. Okay, then I'd have about five of them that I was very, 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 very good at executing. And then around the desert and the mountains and whatnot, I would place my my five contraptions, a variety of places, maybe duplicate a couple of them, but not get new ones. And we'd mash the hell out of that Roadrunner and be eating Roadrunner every day.
Hey, Coach, I'm just curious about, did you know that Jessamyn McIntyre?
Have you ever seen a Roadrunner? Real quick, I know, yes. I know you have a great question, but No, have you ever seen a roadrunner?
Yeah, and when I was in Arizona, I used to ride out in the desert, and I saw a roadrunner running across the street that I was riding my bike on with a big old snake in his mouth. It's awesome.
Hey, so at College of the Desert, we were the roadrunners. Uh-huh. And when I first went down there, I'm thinking, roadrunners, wow, I've never even seen a roadrunner. And if you think about it, most people haven't seen a roadrunner. I mean, and other than maybe a Wolverine or something, less people have seen a roadrunner, or less people have seen a Wolverine maybe, but yeah, most people haven't seen a roadrunner. So I'm thinking, well, will I ever get to see a roadrunner? So we'd go out there and practice. We had these bushes around the field and stuff. There were roadrunners everywhere. And the thing is, you know, you have the idea that when you watch the cartoon, those roadrunners are probably like 4 feet tall or something. They're not 4 feet tall, but they're about a foot.
Yeah.
maybe a little on. But I'm just telling you, they'd be running all over that field. And those roadrunners, they have great change of direction. Not as fast straight ahead as you think, but great change of direction. And they're built exactly like that cartoon roadrunner. They actually look, other than the coloration, a lot like that cartoon roadrunner, you know, where the knees bend just so like that fellas do.
Well, Coach, this seems like a good time to ask you, do you still have the owl in your backyard?
You know, I got a bunch of how do you say it politely? I got a bunch of owl scat on the roof of this shed behind there, and I can see my neighbor's, the pitch of his roof, and he's got owl scat on his. So, and I can see it kind of dripping down the pitch of my roof. The owl, I believe, is still around. And I've been, you know, gone for spring break, and then you know, we were working out at night, so I haven't seen the owl as much in the last month. The owl's still there, and I'm a little curious how many owls there are, but there's one that I know I see consistently because he's a big old bulky owl.
Hey, Coach, you interested in the NCAA tournament? Do you fill out a bracket or anything like that?
No, I used to. In law school, I did. In law school, I could do pretty good at it. I'd be horrible at it now. I can't even entirely tell you who's in it. I was at relatives' houses over spring break, so got to listen to Bill Walton commentate on games. And there were some reasonably good games, but I have to say listening to him was more entertaining than some of them. And I know that people are split on, but I love listening to him. And then his partner does a great job too, I think. And then, when I was in law school, what would happen in law school, you'd walk in the library and they'd have all the newspapers sitting there. And let's see, I can read my law book. No, but I have to catch up on my current events. So I would read the LA Times, in particular the sports page, cover to cover. Then I'd say, well, I could go study law, or I could read the Daily News. And then I'd read that. Then I'd say, well, no, I'm going to read the USA Today. And then I'd go study law. Well, then at that point in time, shoot, I was pretty good at knowing who had what and who was good and who was this and who was that. I'm really not very good at that anymore. And the funny thing, I knew more about, I could handicap football teams better then too, because right now I only know about the teams we play, you know.
We're talking to Coach Mike Leach. I think of you every year when the tournament comes out for this reason, because I think to myself, isn't this awful? We have 3 weeks of a playoff to determine who the national champion's going to be. It's not a bowl system where you play your game and you win and you go home. This is absolutely no fun at all, because I think to myself how enjoyable this is, and it'd probably be pretty fun in football too.
Oh, it'd be outstanding in football. Yeah, because everybody's miserable and it sucks so bad that I get that my phone, my phone is buzzing all the time as people are sending me their picks. They're sending me when they're in some kind of gathering where people are brought together, happier than hell to be around each other and excited as they're doing their bracket picks and cheering and talking to their friends. And they're just in a state of misery to the point where they're texting me all the time. And then everybody's engaged in the games. As we get ready to have our meetings, everybody's talking about it because it's that miserable. And then after they play, then there's going to be even more talk because everybody embraces the misery of being excited about seeing who advances. And then it continues. And then somebody's team gets knocked out. So then they select another team to root for, or another one and another one. And in some cases, they root for a team to see who they think's going to get beat the worst, and they're engaged with that. And then, the college football is just kidding themselves. First of all, they're just flat out lying to themselves that it wouldn't be incredibly exciting. And the story I tell all the time, I've probably told on this radio show, is I travel around the country because, Gonzaga's right up the road, and I meet their coaches sometimes, and they're great guys. I mean, fantastic guys, and they've done a great job. And so you go to the East Coast or somewhere, or the South, and you're recruiting, and somebody will have some Gonzaga stuff on. Hey, are you from Washington? And the guy will look at you and say, Washington, D.C.? No, I mean, are you from Spokane? Where's Spokane? Eastern Washington. You got all this Gonzaga stuff on. Oh, no, I just like Gonzaga. I watched them, and they upset so-and-so, and they did this, and they beat somebody, and then they won it this one time, or they almost won it the other time. And, there's all these Gonzaga fans all over that can't even find Spokane on a map, and the reason is because they've been engaged and thrilled and excited and their life uplifted because they had the opportunity to see the Gonzaga basketball team play, and they're thrilled to death to know Gonzaga to the point where they go and buy a bunch of gear. And it'd be outstanding, and football's missing the boat. And they also, not only that, they totally relinquished the month of December, most of December, by letting the NFL have all that market share.
He is Coach Mike Leach. Mike, we always really enjoy it. We appreciate you taking the time, and I am going to try and find a way to get the Wile E. Coyote to refine his playbook to reduce the number of contraptions that he's using.
Now, if he reduced the play, that's what they ought to do. They ought to do a new Wile E. Coyote and have him and my favorite was Foghorn Leghorn along the same lines. And I actually used to call Wes Welker the Chicken Hawk, and he'd get pissed, but it was actually a compliment because, you know, he was so efficient and would just dominate every little task, you know. And then even though he was like the small, unassuming guy, but he didn't like being the Chicken Hawk, but too bad. And then, they ought to have Wiley come back, you know, does some studying, does some lessons, come back with some well-defined plays, and just mash the Roadrunner.
Coach, we love it. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Coach.
Right. Thanks, Mike.
To you.
That is Coach Mike Leach. I'm always going to think of that now when I see the Roadrunner, is how the Wile E. Coyote needs to refine his playbook. It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We're going to check in with Tim Beckham in Tokyo next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Some people got up early. I believe that would be Jessamyn McIntyre. Some people stayed up late. I believe that would be Dave Wyman. And in between, people found a way to watch the Mariners open their season with some new additions, a little bit of power, including this shot. That was from Tim
Ball, deep to left center field. Pinder going back, looking up. Goodbye, baseball. Tim Beckham, welcome to Seattle. A two-run shot here in the top of the fifth inning. It comes with Ryan Healy aboard. Holy smokes, home run number one of the year for Tim Beckham. And it's now the Mariners 9 and the A's 4.
We felt that all the way back here, Tim. Congrats on the win, and that had to feel pretty good.
Yeah, man, it was definitely a good feeling. You know, it was a good feeling to get the first win of the season under our belt, and just see the team vibing as we're doing right now.
How's it been to be over there in Japan?
It's been fun, man, to say the least. It's been really fun, man. The fans welcoming us with open arms, and they treat us like celebrities over here. And just to go out in the city and be able to sightsee and kind of live that touristy lifestyle here in Japan has just been awesome.
Yeah, what's kind of the funniest thing you've seen, Tim? Because notice the crowd, the reaction was kind of different watching it on TV, and I played football over there one time, and the bigger the guy was that walked through the crowd, the more they would cheer. And so, what were some of the sort of different things that you've noticed there?
Well, I would have to say during the exhibition games against the Tokyo Giants and. Just how the fans stay engaged. I mean, it's still spring training for them as well, you know, and how the fans stay engaged as during games like that, and the chance that they, I would say the chance that they chant for the players, players that are hitting, or when the players do something good, but they just, the whole section or whole fans is chanting a certain, I don't even know what they call it, but, you know, it's, sounds fun and it sounds
anything. Boy, Tim, social media took off with your bat flip. Who all did you hear from about that?
Oh, man, my phone's still blowing up right now. You know, and to be honest, man, I flipped my bats on bases, but it was kind of a big flip, man. And kind of the game took over, and the adrenaline takes over in the game, and you know, you just want to do stuff to bring energy to the team and anything to help the team win a ball game.
Hey, is it true you were Swaggy T in Baltimore?
Yeah, the nickname originated in Tampa, and that's what all the guys in the locker room used to call me over there. They used to call me Swaggy, or they used to call me Swaggy T. So it just kind of stuck with me, and when I got with Baltimore, you know, that's my nickname wanted to be, and I remember I told Evan Longoria and Logan Morrison, and when I did get traded, I was going to keep this. They was like, well, you need to keep the nickname Swaggy T. I was like, yeah, I told him I'd keep it. So, you know, wanted to keep my word, and I went with Swaggy T when I went to Baltimore.
We're talking to Tim Beckham here on the Venue Kings Hotline. He is over in Tokyo, the Mariners. Well, it's tomorrow there. It's today.
Yeah, what is it there, 9:30 in the morning, Tim?
Yeah, it's, you've woken up in the morning.
Yes, it's 9:30 a.m.
Can you tell us who wins the Arizona State game tonight?
Say what now?
Can you tell us who won the Arizona State game tonight? I'd like to make some money betting on it.
I can't do that, man. If I knew who won the game, if I was paying attention, I probably would shoot you a text and outside the phone call, but can't do that on there.
Tim, what's it like watching the reception for Ichiro?
Oh, man, it's awesome, man. What the game is playing here in our area now. Shit, man, he's been doing this for a long time at a high level, man. And, just to see the fans embrace him here when he came out the field yesterday, just the emotions that, you know, ran through me, and you can look in his eyes and just see, it's a lot of emotions there, and it just gives you goosebumps, man. It gives you chills. Just being on the field with the guy of that, you know, with the guy like Ichiro, you know, with his superstar, you know, the superstar that he is, you know. And, like I told him when he came off the field yesterday, man, like, one of the greatest ever played the game, man. I'm honored to be on the same field as him, to be honest.
Hey, Tim, I'm just curious what the reaction was over in Japan with your teammates and yourself to the contract that Mike Trout got.
Well, it's a lot of money, man, and he's the best. He's the best in the game right now. You know, he's arguably one of the best in the game right now, and he deserves, you know, the best in the game deserves to be paid the most. You know, so but the reaction from our team, I mean, a couple of guys was. We were talking about it in the locker room, but it was nothing crazy. You know, we're happy for him. All the guys are happy for him. And, I mean, other guys got nice contracts as well. Bregman got the 6-year, 100, and I heard a couple relievers talking about other guys getting paid. I think maybe Presley in Houston. But no, it's good. It's good for those guys, man. I hope everyone, you know, makes as much money out of this game as possible to set themselves up for their family and their life after baseball. You know, you got to think about that as well.
He is Tim Beckham. Tim, it's really fun to get off to the kind of start you did in last night's game. Best of luck tonight in game two. We'll be listening, we'll be watching, and we really appreciate you taking the time there from Tokyo.
Love you, man. Thank you for calling.
All right, that is Tim Beckham there, the Mariners shortstop, and he hit a two-run homer yesterday. I said before, these are the perfect kind of players for a team that's where the Mariners are right now, where they're trying to rebuild and trying to take a step back, where you get a guy who is enormously talented, and he was the number one overall pick in 2008, and someone who made it to the major leagues and has had injuries. After his major league debut, he lost an entire season to injury. But having the opportunity now and getting a chance to play every day, he had a good year in Baltimore 2 years ago, and maybe he can either play his way into becoming an increased asset for the Mariners to trade, or someone who's he's still young enough he could be part of their future.
Again, the chip on the shoulder there, and I think he's got something to prove, right? And, you know, that's the thing. I think Pete Carroll would say he's got grit. I mean, he's not injured. He's a guy that's faced some adversity and faced it down. Now he has something to prove. So I say keep flipping those bats. Is that going to get him thrown at?
I don't think so. I think guys have mellowed out about that.
I hope they do throw at him and he charges the mound and we see a melee.
Well, that'd be all right.
We haven't seen a melee in a long time.
Not seen here in Seattle.
Yeah, I enjoy melees. A charging of the mound is one of my favorite things in sports, and I know you're not supposed to say that, but it's awesome.
Oh yeah.
When it happens, you see a guy who's like, I don't care how impolite this is or how much trouble I'm going to get. I'm mad, and I want a piece of that guy.
I appreciate it, especially when the guy who's charging the mound is really mad. Like Bryce Harper. I mean, that was, like, you could see he meant business. He was really mad.
How about when Hasselman was involved?
Hasselman's was a good one, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Hasselman yeah. was furious.
That one went, like, for 20 minutes
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, that was they don't have those anymore.
How about some cocky Seattle Mariners? You want to see that?
Yes.
I'd be fine with that.
Yes, I do. You know, it's remember Richard Sherman, when he first came on the scene in 2012, he was cocky and brash and kind of put it in everybody's face. I remember the Seahawks fans liked that. Well, Mariner fans, I feel like they're going to have a chip on their shoulder, too, this year. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. The Mariners off to a 1-0 start. They're 89 games away from meeting Dave's prediction, but we might have seen an Achilles heel last night. We'll tell you what it is next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore here. 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light and Mariners with their bullpen. We saw that. It is the Achilles heel of this team. It is the big uncertainty. I think their lineup's going to be pretty good. I think that we're going to see a starting rotation that doesn't have the type of frontline starters that some of the contenders will have. But then again, the A's are considered a contender and they do not have a sorted out starting rotation right now. They've got some promising young arms. Marco Gonzalez was okay last year. It was a good start. And then you've got a bullpen that is going to be anybody's guess as to how it sorts itself out this season.
Well, if Strickland, I mean, if this is any indication, that was pretty good. He got a fly out to right and two strikeouts. So, and one of them was an 8-pitch strikeout, but a couple of them, you know, a couple of times he had him looking. So he looked pretty strong. We'll see. I mean, it's always, you know, you look at these names, Rombolo, Corey Guerin, who we talked to, you know, Ross Cupp. I mean, these guys, hopefully you're able to, you know, maybe do a little bit of experimenting and putting guys in at different times and seeing, you know, get a feel for, because this is sort of the year to experiment, right? You know, I mean, if you're gonna possibly suck this year, which I don't think they are, I think they're going to win 89 more games. You know, this is time to maybe experiment and using different guys and get an opportunity. I'm really excited to see Kikuchi tonight. And I'm thinking about staying up for it again.
Staying up as opposed to getting up.
Is it 2:30 again?
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to watch it live again?
Yeah, that's what I did last night. It worked out okay, but, you know, I only got 4 hours of sleep. But, man, it was exciting.
About going to bed when you got home and then getting up early?
I just can't go home and just go to bed.
You're too wired off of the show?
Yeah, I'm so excited about our show. I'm so fired up.
Would you always be more likely to stay up late than to get up early?
Yes. I hate getting up. Really hate getting up in the morning.
Well, see, I thought about doing the go to bed at 10 and set an alarm for 2:30, and then, yeah, I woke up like at 4:30 and thought, well, I'll just sleep another hour. And yeah, when you fast forward through it, though, Dave, you can watch it in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It is going to be exciting to see Yusei Kikuchi.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that tonight. We'll see how he handles all the fanfare, because it's going to be a big deal in Japan tonight. Ichiro probably is not going to start. Maybe he'll get a pinch-hitting appearance, like you're saying, Danny. But I think the bigger deal with Ichiro was last night. And, yeah, Suzuki, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of butterflies going for him tonight.
How much is Major League Baseball trying to expand their brand in Japan? Because, you know, I was just thinking about that last night, if that was maybe a big deal or a point of emphasis to the Seahawks, or the Mariners, too, to do all the stuff that they did, all the fanfare and everything with Ichiro.
It certainly helps. For the Mariners?
Yeah.
It certainly helps them.
Well, and just Major League Baseball in general.
Yeah. There's certainly been a working arrangement that's been established between the Japanese professional teams and the posting system, which still remains kind of weird how it works. But if you're the Mariners, you want to play over there for the simple reason that when Japanese players come here, they in many ways have an influence on who they choose to play for. Yusei Kikuchi chose to play for the Mariners. Shohei Ohtani considered the Mariners but chose to play for the Angels. Mm. Like those sort of things, that actually there's a strategic element to getting the exposure over there. I've always thought NFL, that when they play international games, that it's dumb. That it's an exercise in hubris on the part of NFL owners who sit there and look at the potential marketing value of teams overseas. And I just think to myself, there's very little evidence. And maybe you guys feel differently. You and Jess were in England for the Seahawks game. I always think that the people that are fans of it over there are expats, are people that are Americans living overseas.
Do you remember when Norm MacDonald used to do the news for Saturday Night Live? He would always say, Germans love David Hasselhoff. Germans love the Seahawks. Jess, how many were there? I can't remember the number, but I know that I guess their fan club there is like 200,000 or something like that.
It's huge.
There's 200,000 Seahawks fans in Germany?
Well,
something like that.
It might be either the NFL fans and then the Seahawks, but there is a German Seahawkers club. But the thing is, over there, a lot of people love the Seahawks because they come over and they are very engaging with their fans, but they're just NFL fans there.
Danny,
every team was represented at the game.
It's either 230,000 or 23,000. One of the two. I don't remember if there's an extra zero in there.
One of those numbers is impressive, and the other one is not.
I think it was a ridiculous guess.
I don't know their exact number, but they are strong and they pay attention. I mean, I actually was up watching the game last night, the Mariners game, 2:35 in the morning, and I was tweeting about it, and my friends over across the pond were saying, imagine doing this every single week for 4 months, because that's what they do to watch the Seahawks games during football season.
It's an interesting point about whether or not the NFL can expand its footprint. Baseball, it is an established international sport, because even if there's fans over there to serve it, you're not getting overseas prospects for the NFL. There's not guys that are coming out of the number of guys that have been born in England and come over here and become NFL players. It's very few and far between. Whereas in baseball, you definitely have the international labor market, the number of international players, well, both in Latin America and now in the Far East, it's really quite significant.
I think it's great that the Mariners did it when you look at it in the global bigger picture, but I bet you if you went in that clubhouse and talked to Scott Servais and everybody else that are involved in these games, aside from Ichiro and probably Kikuchi, they don't like the disruption of their routine down there in Peoria getting ready for the season, and it is kind of a weird schedule they've got this year.
Why do we care about that? Why do we care about it inconveniencing them? Isn't it you get assigned to
play
the game?
Well, I don't really care. It was just something I thought I'd bring up. So if you want to know honestly what I'm thinking, because if I was one of those guys, I'd be like, well, what are we doing? We're going to get on a flight and go 14 hours to play these games. They're probably having a great experience.
Yeah.
Like Shannon, when I see her tweeting and she's out in the streets of Tokyo, she looks like she's having a great time. And I'm sure they are too. And they'll never forget this. But I'm pretty sure that if you were to talk to him, they'd say, you know, it probably would have been a lot easier if we just hung out here in Peoria and started the season in Seattle.
I've never talked to a team or covered a team that's gone overseas that has regretted that. they've all felt that it's a bonding experience for the players.
Okay.
And that you get some excitement to be on the road. I know that the Sonics in 2004 opened their season with two games against the Clippers in Japan. And Nate McMillan, who is as old school as any coach will ever get about, hey, we should be focused and getting into the routine of things, he was so excited when he found out that they were going to go because he felt like that's really a chance for the team members to get to know each other, and you bring spouses over and everybody hangs out, you go to ceremonial dinners, that there's a whole bonding part of it. And a team like the Mariners, where you've got so many new guys, I think it can be really beneficial.
That's a good point. Yeah, with all the new players, yeah, bonding together, especially, you know, I was just hoping they'd get a split. I don't know why. I know it's a step back season. It shouldn't matter, but I think it's cool that they started out 1-0. I even like, you know, people say, hey, they got the best record in Major League Baseball. I know it's just one game, but what the hell? Seattle Mariners are on top of the world right now.
You're out in front. Yeah. They're 89 away. 89 games to go is what Dave Wyman had logged in today with the fact that they, the prediction that they'll win 90 games.
Do you see the big grin on Jerry DePoto's face when he found out I predicted 90?
He was excited.
He looked at me and said, this guy knows what he's talking about.
He said, I like it.
Yeah.
he wasn't quite
co-signing. It was a look like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's out of his mind, but yeah, I like it.
A little bit of a double take.
He wasn't quite co-signing with you, but he was certainly supportive of it and believing that that was going to happen. With Kikuchi, you say Kikuchi is the great unknown in many ways, both for this season and for the future, because if the bullpen is the big sort of the unproven commodity on this year's team, the future of the starting rotation is very much, we're back to hoping on prospects again, right? The same way when there was the big three of Danny Holtz and James Paxton, and the third one was Taijuan Walker. Mm-hmm. When you had the big three and waiting to see if one of those guys is going to be a front of the rotation starter, in some ways we're back to that with Justice Sheffield and whether or not Ryan Dunn is going to remain a starter. Justin Dunn's going to remain a starter. Being able to get guys, and now with Yusei Kikuchi, Kikuchi's the one guy that he has the possibility of being a front end of the rotation starter this year.
Yeah, you sure hope that's going to be the case, and we'll get our first look at him tonight. I like his wind-up and delivery there where he hesitates, kind of like...
It's a weird kick.
Yeah, it's a weird kick, and I think it's going to take some getting used to. But, no, I think you're right. You've got the two guys, the two lefties at the top, and then the other three guys, they're just kind of serving time there, Mike Leake and Wade LeBlanc. You like those guys, but really they're innings eaters. You're hoping they will be, and then you got Felix as your number five now.
Don't you think that little kick is like just one more thing to have to sort of worry about if you're a hitter?
I think it's going to be extremely off-putting. I think it's going to be extremely off-putting for hitters.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason why when Japanese pitchers come over here, they usually have exceptional success early on. You remember Hideo Nomo, who was one of the first big-name pitchers to come over. It's a different delivery style. And everything about how pitchers are raised in Japan is different. The number of innings that they throw, the frequency that they throw, the wear and tear that can be on their arms. But the deliveries are also different. That idea of having, I mean, Nomo would fully turn his back to the hitter. You fully turn his back in the midst of it. And with Kikuchi, it's kind of this stall where it seems like he's perfectly balanced, but it's an odd crane-like stall in the middle of it, and then he kicks out with the leg and comes forward. And I'll be excited to see what kind of stuff he has, because if there's a guy, he could be an all-star caliber pitcher. We'll see exactly what happens. The Mariners get underway with their second game. Coming up next, we got the professor, John Clayton. He tells us about the week that was in the NFL.